Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, it's Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
It's fall. It's my favorite season.
Yeah, that's right. Is this your favorite?
Yeah, because it's so nice. Even if it's warm during the day, it's cool in the morning and it's cooler earlier in the evening. Because I love taking evening walks around, you know, sunset and such. So I like it. What's your favorite season?
I was just going to say guess. Can you guess mine?
Summer.
Absolutely.
Because it's the hottest.
You know, it's so fun. I love summer. Like, I don't know. It's like the joy. Everyone's running around, excited, the beach. I love it. But I don't think you're alone. A lot of people, I feel like fall. I think that's my mom's favorite. A lot of people like fall.
I have to say there's some benefit to every season. I can really put my, wrap my arms around each one because I love skiing. So I love the winter. I like the cold.
That's true.
You know, and I love spring with all the blossoming flowers and all that. And
it's true.
Summer I like the least probably because it's so warm.
It's so hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like growing up East Coast, like the winter, it is just
brutal.
Death. Ugh. And so the summer is just like a welcome, like, oh my God, I'll totally take this. So maybe that's where I'm getting it from.
So, I had such a fun time on Sunday. Are you too young to know who Carole King is?
Someone invited me to a Carole King concert and I didn't know who she was.
Oh, the real concert with her performing?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Well, this was at the Pantages Theater. It was actually a play based on her life.
That's
and
what
all
it was.
Of her songs. That's what it was. Yeah. Oh. And you missed it? You turned it down?
Yes.
You would have probably known at least 80% of the songs.
Really?
Yes.
Sing one.
I can't sing.
I knew that would kill you.
You've Got a Friend? Do you know that one?
Of course, sure.
Yeah. What happened is I learned so much about her life is initially she did not write her own songs. Her husband, the one she signed up with, was the writer and she was the composer.
Uh-huh.
She was too shy, I guess, to actually put her stuff out there. And then at some point in her career, she just decided to take the chance and people love that about her. And she wrote, she's got something like 101 number one hits.
Really?
I mean, no, she's huge.
Wow.
Jeez.
I know. Can you believe
well, you know, you're not that much younger than I am.
No.
No.
I feel like I just don't know the name so well, but.
But anyway, it was fabulous. It was so well done.
That's
it was
great.
Just so touching. It just brought me back to the good parts of my childhood,
right?
Which weren't many, but I'm just teasing.
Did you go with Christopher?
I did. Yeah.
It was that's nice. So nice.
Yeah.
That's
and
great.
Then have you seen the movie, A Simple Favor?
No.
Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively?
No.
Oh, it's really, you are going to love it.
Is it good?
Oh, you'll love it.
I feel like I remember hearing about it. Is it scary? Is it like a drama?
It's more like a psychological thriller, and the characters are really weird.
Wait a minute. I think I saw the preview for this. What happens? Like, what's the plot? Like,
well, I can't give it away, but basically, Blake Lively's character is very interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think I remember this.
Lots of twists and turns. Anyway.
I love that.
Enough about me.
Yeah.
You? It's sort of like an escape room in the movies.
You've sold me.
Yeah. Okay.
Done. No, things are okay. You know, my boys were so good this weekend that I almost like
bless
maybe
them.
Should just like run away now so I can like leave on a high point.
What chemical did you put in
their
food?
I'm trying to think, and it's so funny because I try to recreate like everything. Like, what did they do? What did they eat? No, they were really good. I took London's in jiu-jitsu now, so he's like
that's
this little.
Good.
Isn't that great? So
he
loves
spending
that.
Some energy. Awesome.
And, I spent like the whole day with them Saturday. Run around. We went to a birthday party. Like things were good. So it felt like I didn't feel as taxed. You know what I mean? Like after the weekend, and it wasn't like it felt good. So I feel really good. Sorry, I'm not used to this volume. I got to adjust up. All right, so we talk about last week's guest.
Yes, Lane Dolphin, right?
She yeah,
just
Dolphin.
Like the dolphin,
exactly.
But spelled differently. She's been interpreting her own dreams and her clients' dreams for years. She wrote the book. What was it actually?
I think it was Have a Great Dream.
Have a Great Dream, right? Yeah. I didn't put that in there. Sorry. Anyway.
No, this was my outline. Blame
me. Right.
Blame me.
Most of what I loved about her is because, you know, I do have done a lot of dream work, both on myself and with my clients, but I was primarily taught through Gestalt therapy.
Right.
And she took a nice view of taking both Freudian, Jungian, Gestalt, and Adler all combined. And so she uses from so many different
yeah,
theoretical mm-hmm. orientations, that it's a really nice, well-rounded thing. And I love that it was about problem solving.
Yes.
Looking at our dreams as a version of problem solving.
Exactly. Yeah.
And no, how our unconscious mind, yeah, is oftentimes representing the parts of us that we are underrepresenting in our conscious life.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. I love analyzing my dreams. I love it. And yeah. other people's, and which other is people. Probably not right because they didn't ask. But hey, let me tell you.
Hey, I think that anytime somebody tells you a dream, it's fair game to analyze it.
I like that.
Theory. Right? You don't want to have somebody thinking about it? Don't say it.
Exactly.
How's that?
Perfect.
Bold. That's my underrepresented part of my personality. I'm bold now.
I don't know if it's underrepresented.
Is it funny how we see ourselves, though? I always yes. see myself as a sort of like vulnerable, sensitive, shy person, because that's how I started.
Yes.
You know, and I've allowed myself to develop these other components to my personality, but they did not come very easily.
Yeah.
So
when do you feel like you came into your own? Like what age? Like when were you like, okay, I'm comfortable in my skin?
When I wrote my first book and my agent said, you know, you have to get out there in the media or you're not going to sell one copy. I'm like, holy shit, really?
So you had to.
I had to.
How old were you?
In my, what was I, 40?
Okay.
Something yeah, like that. Yeah. 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 So that was big. It was yeah. a big turning point.
But it's good.
Yeah.
Needed to.
Got yeah. over my performance anxiety of speaking and wow. being on camera. And
you speak so well. Like you speak very naturally and.
You do. Okay. Anyway, today.
Yes. Today. You want to do what you're sipping? I don't know.
Absolutely.
You kind of started and then
blueberry lavender tea. That's what I have today. I'll let you smell it afterwards.
Wait, do you make it yourself?
Yeah.
And you put it in the Jack in the Box thing. How much have you reused that sucker?
Like, probably 1,000 times.
Oh my! At least. What is it about that cup that you like so much?
It's big, and I can put lots of ice in it, and I can put lots of liquid in there.
But is it plastic or is it paper?
It's plastic.
Oh, it is plastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. McDonald's used to make the plastic ones. They moved away to paper. Damn buggers. Anyway, today, so excited. We have Kevin Murphy, former Wall Street managing director for Citigroup, high school and collegiate wrestling champion, community activist, speaker, coach, and author of the book, The Three Rooms, Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life. These experiences have given Kevin a unique and eclectic mix of understanding human nature. He noticed that our happiness and unhappiness in life is always the result of our thoughts, whether observations of the present, memories of the past, or projected fears about the future. Combining this theory with the deep personal insights he attained along his own 20-plus year spiritual journey, Kevin stepped away from the corporate world to write the book, The Three Rooms, in which he explains how observing which room your thoughts are in can change your experience of life. The Three Rooms invites you to start the process of better monitoring your thoughts while providing you the keys to transform your life by doing so. As Kevin notes, those thoughts merely affect our health, our wealth, and our relationships. No small action there. Welcome, Kevin.
Well, thank you very much, ladies, for having me on.
Of course. We're so excited. I love the title.
Yeah,
it's
too.
So intriguing, The Three Rooms. You wonder, what is that? What is that about? So what inspired you to write this book, and why now?
Well, I think, you know, as far as inspiring, I think 5 years ago, this would have been a very unlikely conversation, because I had been in the middle of a long career on Wall Street, but I started having premonitions that I was going to write a book, and it included the image of three doors, and one was labeled the past, and one was labeled the present, and one was labeled the future, and I think those three doors, you know, eventually became three rooms, because I kept describing the places our thoughts go behind the doors. And what was really most interesting to me was that early on, I wrote down 10 chapters to the book, and those chapters never changed. And then over the next 3 years, while I was commuting back and forth, you know, into the city, I kept writing down thoughts and ideas, and I would fill them into different parts of the book. And, you know, sometimes they came from movies or songs. Other times it was just from life experiences. You know, like this, you know, this goes into the, you know, chapter on the past room. Someone's constantly going back and, you know, recalling, you know, things that made them angry. And you know, this is when your thoughts move back and forth. So I would literally write on the train, on the subways, or, you know, in the gym in the morning when I was on the treadmill. And, you know, eventually all the chapters were filled in, you know, and I realized, you know, I needed to publish the book.
So it's super fascinating because I love your background, because not only did you work on Wall Street, but you were also a wrestling champion. Is that right?
That's true. I wrestled all through high school and college, and was a collegiate champion as well. And I've been coaching little kids wrestling for the last 30 plus years, and that has been very rewarding. And I think all of our life experiences, go into what makes us our character and who we are. All of us always deal with adversity too, in all different types, whether it's at work, at home. And, for me, dealing with adversity, I just kept looking within for answers instead of trying to get answers, from other people. Because, a lot of times you get the wrong answers. Mm-hmm. And you can find lots of information now about, how to live a consciousness-minded lifestyle. We hear things about, like mindfulness and living in the present and being in the now. And it all centers around the conscious awareness of our thoughts. So a lot of people understand how important it is to monitor our thoughts. The problem is most of us just don't do a very good job at it. So you have to ask yourself the question, why not? And if they can affect our, our health and our wealth and our relationships and everything, then, why don't people monitor them more? And either they just don't want to take the time or don't think they have the time to take them, or they just not really sure how. I think the purpose of the three rooms is kind of to address the how.
Yeah, well, how?
So tell us the secret.
Well, I think, we're at an interesting time in our history where, many people are looking within to find that peace and the feeling of harmony or unity, like with others. And yet when you look around, you still see so many people in stress and, struggling, with job pressures and addiction and real feelings of isolation. So not only are people taking sides on a lot of different issues, but they're no longer listening to the other side's point of view. And in many areas, there's a lot more disharmony than there is harmony, and that really just shouldn't be the case. I mean, we need to start seeing the similarities we share and not being driven apart, by our differences. Mm-hmm. And so, really the key, and one of the keys to the book is about being aware of our thoughts. And in order to be aware of them, we need to observe them. Mm-hmm. And it is that active observation that separates our awareness from our thoughts. So we're no longer at the effect of them. Mm. And that awareness, or that consciousness, is the divine consciousness that all the mystics have always talked about. Mm. And so it's the universal intelligence, that we all have access to. And that's what you have access to when you're in the present room.
So, okay, let's talk briefly about the three rooms and maybe what the significance is of each of them.
Sure. Well, I think, I look at the past room as being when you're looking back at something that's happened in the past, or your perception of something that's happened in the past that causes you to feel negative emotions. So it's something, either it could have been something you think someone said or did to you that's making you angry, or, maybe it's something you did that, that you regret and you feel guilty about. Because we know other people can make us feel guilty, but we can be brutal on ourselves, and so those looking in the past and feeling negative emotions, where we talk about the past room. In the future room, it's looking into the future and typically thinking about things you don't have and maybe how you can't get it, or kind of envisioning a worst case scenario and feeling the negative emotions that those thoughts bring out. And typically it's things like stress, mm-hmm. or anxiety, or a feeling of lack. But when you're in the present and you're not going back and thinking about negative emotions, something that brings on negative emotions from the past, or worrying about something that could or could not happen in the future, when you're centered in the present, that's when you have these feelings of, appreciation and joy, gratitude and love, and all of those we'll just call them, good feeling emotions. And so the key, it's not about never moving back and forth to the past or the future, because we're always going to be moving back and forth. Mm-hmm. but it's about knowing when you're going back and knowing when you're feeling negative emotions. And ultimately, it's all about the emotions. Now, our thoughts have the biggest effect on our emotions, but how you know where you're going if you're leaving the present room is by how you feel. Because your thoughts can fool you. You know, sometimes we say, no, I'm not mad at that person. Mm-hmm. And then you hear, you know, they talk more and more. I'm really not mad at them. And mm-hmm. you can tell someone's, you know, underlying, they're feeling angry just thinking about the person
or
talking about them.
Have you heard me talk to my husband?
They're saying they're not mad, but they are.
Right.
And, you know, your thoughts can fool you, but your emotions never lie.
Mm-hmm.
Emotions tell you. So if you're not feeling, you know, peaceful, and if you're not feeling good, then you're in the wrong room.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the past room. And one of the things that often comes up for people is stored resentments. I always love the saying that expectations are resentments under construction, right? And we have expectations of people where they haven't necessarily signed up with what we think they've agreed to, but they've never even mm-hmm. been part of the contract. So how do you help people with resentments? Because I know that so many people walk around just mired in resentment.
Yeah, that's, you know, resentment is a really, really powerful emotion, you know, and a negative emotion. And sometimes it's based on a miscommunication, but typically it's when we're looking at, you know, someone else and we're looking at something that they have and that we don't have, or they're doing that we, you know, we want to do. And, you know, it's causing that negative emotion. And it's all because we're looking out and we're allowing what we see and hear all around us in the physical world and all during our day to affect how we feel inside. And if we start with how we feel inside and trying to, you know, align with, let's say, with our own, you know, soul, if you will, and starting to feel positive emotions early in the morning, then we're much, you know, less likely to be, you know, looking at other people, judging other people, or really kind of wanting what they have. And so, but it really starts with, you know, being aware that you're feeling that way. Because sometimes you're feeling resentment, and people are feeling, and they don't really know why. And sometimes, you know, you look at a friend like, what's wrong with you? And then nothing, why? And you see that someone else, you know, they have an issue with someone else, and that someone else came up, you know, is now, you know, there, and you know that's causing it, but they may not even, you know, consciously be aware that there's something about that person that's causing them to feel, you know, resentment, but it's, you know, more subconscious. And if it's subconscious, that person who's feeling that resentment is not going to change those emotions, because you're not going to change those emotions because you don't realize that you're feeling them and you're not realizing, you're not aware of that. Well, you're obviously thinking about something, that person or something that they remind you of something else that's causing those emotions. So it starts with the simple concept of three rooms is that if I know, like, how do I feel? And if I know that I'm feeling resentment or anger or, you know, any types of those negative emotions, depending on what they are, then you can start to ask yourself, well, yeah, I'm not feeling right. Why am I feeling this way? And then you usually can point it to, oh yeah, because he just walked up or she just walked up and, you know, she said something to someone else. And now you can start to put it together. Once you're aware of it, then you can start to let it go. And there's, you know, there's a couple of ways of letting it go. You know, one, of course, being if you think someone did something to you, then it's a matter of forgiveness. And forgiveness is always tough because so many of us have levels of forgiveness. Now, I can't tell you how many times I've heard someone say that, you know, well, I'm a forgiving guy, but, you know, this time he crossed the line. Like, well, what line? Like, well, what line did they cross? You know, so if you truly can forgive them, then you can move back into the present. You can let go of different negative emotions. And if you think that someone really did something that's, you know, too bad, you know, or to forgive, then you should really look at some of the stories about people who have undergone real hardship mm-hmm. and have chosen to forgive someone else. And then see, does that let them off the other person off the hook, or does it let them off the hook?
Mm-hmm.
And it really frees you. And people kind of know that. Yeah, I know. I've heard that before. But it's not just hearing it before. It's the truth. The longer you hang on to those thoughts that are causing the resentment or that anger, then you're going to continue to feel those emotions that you felt over and over. And if you have a concept that okay, that's just, it's my thoughts in the past, and it's causing these negative emotions, and if I can forgive it, I can choose to look at it a different way, then I can start to move back into the present, and I can start to feel good again.
Mm-hmm.
And I can start to think positive thoughts that can bring me back to feeling good. But you can never get to that point unless you're aware that you're not feeling good, or you're feeling that resentment, and it's because you're thinking about something that's already happened.
Can you speak to the difference, though, between when you're forgiving somebody who acknowledges that they've done something wrong, which I think is a really nice opening for someone to be able to say, wow, I'm getting that acknowledgement. So yes, forgiveness seems much easier. But then you have these situations where, let's say, a child who was abused and grows up and says to her mom, you know, mom, but you were really brutal with me when I was, you know, growing up, and you used to hit me and it hurt, and you hurt my feelings a lot, and you belittled me. And the mom says, you deserved all of that.
Mm.
And then the now adult child is crushed again. And how do you forgive somebody for their actions when they still perpetuate? Yeah, that was just what was and what should have been.
You know, that's a great point, and that's one of the hardest things about forgiveness is, you know, forgiving when the other person hasn't said they're sorry. And, you know, we've all experienced that. And so, you know, it's so much easier, we know, to forgive when someone says, look, I'm really sorry for doing that. I'll never do it again. Or feel so bad about it. Okay, no problem. I forgive you. But the true test of forgiveness is when they haven't said they're sorry. And you have a great example of, you know, childhood experiences that, you know, they're more and more, they're finding out how much these childhood traumatic experiences are leading to, you know, higher and higher levels of, you know, addiction in, you know, kids, you know, as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're holding on to that, and it's causing them to, you know, to seek other outlets to release that, you know, those painful memories. And so once again, it's about, you know, understanding that forgiveness is not to let the other person off the hook, and it's not to free them.
Mm-hmm.
It is to free you from the negative emotions and to move on and to come back and to let it go, and then to come back into the present and say, okay, how do I want my life to go from here? You know, I choose to feel good, and I can't every time I keep going back. Because remember, forgiving someone doesn't mean you have to still do lunch with them once a week.
Right.
Forgiving them doesn't mean that you have to maintain a relationship with them.
Right.
But forgiving them means you're free to move on with the rest of your life. And it really is empowering. But you hit one of the biggest issues right on the head. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really being able to do that when someone else, you know, hasn't said they're sorry, and, you know, they're unrepentant for something that they intentionally, you know, inflicted harm on you. But it's about your release and not theirs.
For me, right. One thing that I just wanted to share for our listeners too is just that acceptance, you know, that everybody's just trying to do the best that they can, you know, and in some ways, maybe this mom, for example, kind of thought, okay, well, you know, this is the best way to parent, and this is the way to do it. And so it's like, it's just that acceptance that, you know, maybe some of these things weren't with malintent, but they just, you know, happened. And so it's just kind of accepting, you know, that person for who they are.
Good point. Absolutely.
Yeah, but first of all, that's a great point, because at one point when in those kind of situations, you can look at it as the buck stops here, because exactly what you just said, someone, let's say a parent, thought that was how they should behave because that's how their parents treated them. They received abuse. which was from their parent, who that's how they behave because their parents behaved a certain way. Mm-hmm. And this cycle keeps going from generation to generation. And you can take this, stay angry at your parent for doing that to you and being unrepentant about it, and then you turn around and that's what you take with you going forward. Mm-hmm. Or you can say, you know, the buck stops here. I choose to move forward with my life in a different way. I want to feel good. I want to feel joy. And these are things, so I'm going to let go of that, and I'm going to start a new life for me, mm-hmm. for my family. I'm going to change things. And so that's another tremendous point about how things do get passed on. And we don't know why people do things that they do. Right. And they are going through their life and whatever mm-hmm. they're going through. And we can only affect what we think and what we feel, and then consequently what we do going forward.
That's also such a ingrained philosophy in so many, even religions, spare the rod, spoil the child. I mean, this was like passed down for generations and people in parenting. And a lot of that was just from lack of knowledge, lack of understanding the developmental process, and that a child is not there trying to annoy you.
Right.
They're actually trying to grow up in the best way that awesome. They can. Yeah. So it's such a complicated situation. Yeah, so mm-hmm. good. Everybody's really speaking a nice language here. Right. This is a nice conversation for sure.
And if you just tuned in, we're talking with Kevin Murphy. He is the author of The Three Rooms, Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life.
You write something in the book that I think is really cute, and it says, every day is Halloween. Can you speak to that? Since we have Halloween right around the corner.
We have Halloween, you know, coming up.
Yeah.
And but it's so true. If you think about Halloween, and kids love Halloween.
So does Kelly.
They get to dress up, right? And nobody knows, you know, who they are.
Wait, hold on, Kevin. Kevin, hold on 1 second, because this is really hysterical. Kelly and her husband do a surprise costume with her and her kids every year. No one's allowed to know it. And then they all just like...
We dress up as a family.
Yes.
And I'm obsessed with Halloween, so I hear you loud and clear. Like, it's not just kids. It's crazy adults as well. But go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
That's great. But it's true. People love Halloween because you can be yourself and you can just have fun, and you're not being judged by, you know, what you look like or anything, because, you know, you're not really, you know, this is just an outward costume that you're wearing. Mm. And so it's just fun to be uninhibited, and kids can just be themselves and be joyful and run around with their mask on, and they go trick-or-treating and they're so happy. And why isn't every day like that? Mm. Because if every day was Halloween, we would just recognize that these costumes we have on, which are these physical bodies, that's really all they are. And they're just costumes. It's not who we really are. Who we really are is that person inside, the person that child is wearing and being on Halloween. It's that person inside. It's that adult on Halloween who's wearing that mask and that costume that people can't really tell, and then they can be themselves and then not feel like they're being judged. So if we look at it as every day is Halloween, that we're just wearing these, you know, outward costumes, and that we can start to recognize the other people that for who they are on the inside and not who they are for their outward costume, their physical body, but really get to know them on the inside. It really helps us to better connect with people when we're focused more on who they are on the inside than who we are on the outside. And it also helps us to be more comfortable in our own skin, mm-hmm. understanding that, okay, this is just my outer body, but this isn't who I am. Now, and there's one other very related concept in the book called the internal mirror, because I think so much is about self-esteem and how we think about ourselves. And, you know, more and more in society, it's a very looks conscious society. And I guess it's always kind of been that way, but maybe with the millennials when it started with the, you know, with the Tinders or the swipe left and right, and, you know, just kind of judging someone by, you know, by their appearance. And I think, you know, even as, you know, middle-aged people, my wife and I have, you know, a number of friends who are trying to start over and meet people, and they're very conscious about how they look, and, you know, did they look young enough, and who are they going to attract, and because they always look in the mirror, and the mirror gives you the reflection of your external body, and we see all of our blemishes and all of our imperfections, and we try to change how we look. But what if there was an internal mirror? What if you can look in a mirror and it would reflect back how you feel on the inside? Now, would you feel love and compassion, or would you, you know, feel anger or resentment, or would you feel fear, or how would you feel looking at that person, which is you being reflected back? And, you know, do you like that person? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people who like looking in the external mirror and like what they look like, but wouldn't be so comfortable looking at an internal mirror. And then there's a lot of people that would probably look, maybe they're not so comfortable when they look in the external mirror and see their reflection that everybody else sees. But if they can see, look in an internal mirror and see a reflection of who they really are on the inside, a wonderful, warm person, that would make them feel really good. And so it's the same concept that we need to get to know that person, and starting with ourselves. Who we are on the inside and liking who we are on the inside. And then when we go out, then it's the concept of Halloween even makes so much more sense, because look at now I know this is just my external body. This is my external costume, but I like who I am on the inside. And then you start to attract like consciousness minded people into your life.
Nice. So I completely understand how this can apply to adults. Do you feel like this concept, like I'm imagining, because I was looking at your book about temper tantrums and anger, and I was thinking about my younger son, and I'm wondering, can you apply that same thing? Like if a child is really angry or upset, are they in kind of the past or future, or, you know, something like that?
Yeah, well certainly it's not the emotion that they're supposed to feel. And so when they're not, you know, when they're not feeling, you know, that way, when they're not feeling joy, it's about something that, you know, they're seeing others. It's behavior, you know, a lot of times that is behavior that they're seeing from other people. Now, sometimes it's from parents, but more often than not, it's from kids in school. And it can start at a very young age because it can start in, you know, in pre-K. You know, in nursery school, they can be going there and they can see certain behaviors, and then they come home and then they start, you know, kind of mimicking those behaviors. But teaching our kids about appreciation and gratitude is really important, and teaching them, you know, that how they feel is important, and trying to tie that to how they think. Because the concept of the three rooms, you know, is really designed to be simple enough for a child. And you, children can't be too young to start to learn to monitor how they think and how they feel. You know, my daughter's in middle school, and she can point out all, you know, right away. She goes, "Oh, Dad, that guy's really in the past room. Look at, he's like, he's angry at something. I don't know what he's mad at, but he's got to come back into the present room." And all her friends can point it out, you know, like, "Well, she's in the future. Well, look at her. She keeps stressing out about this." And so the better kids are at identifying, and it's kind of like a game, you know, which room are they in? And the better kids can be at identifying which room someone else is in, or which, you know, where their thoughts and emotions are, then the better they get to identifying how they feel and where their thoughts are. And once again, it's all about the awareness, because in order to just answer the question of which room are my thoughts in, you have to be aware of your thoughts, and that awareness is you've already connected to this universal consciousness that we all share.
Good. And so we've spent some time in the past. We've spent some time in the present. Let's go to the future for a moment. Actually, I was thinking about, you know, at least in our work for Kelly and me, we try to help people stay mostly in the present, but it's important for people to also understand their past, to be able to learn from it, etc. It's also important for people to learn how to plan for the future and have goals and all that, but not to be so mired in the fears about the future. So can you speak to that whole concept a little bit?
Yeah, that's a really good question and concept, because you touch on a real hot button for so many people. You know, stress is one of the leading causes of chronic illness. You know, and of course, there are many types of stress, but let's focus on mental stress. You know, when our thoughts of the future produce negative emotions. You know, for example, when we have a strong desire and it is not here right now, we keep thinking of not having it. And that thought produces an unpleasant emotion. Now, it could be a new job we're hoping to get, or getting accepted into a school, or making more money. But the more we think of not having it, brings on feelings of stress, and it ends up pushing away the very thing we're trying to achieve. Now, we don't want to admit it, but we're choosing those thoughts that are causing us to feel stress. We don't have to focus on not having what we want. We can instead choose thoughts of when we did get our last job and how that felt. And then we make sure we do everything we can to put us in a position to get the new job. And then focus on the feeling of getting it, not on the feeling of not having it. And by focusing on the feeling of getting the job, those good feeling thoughts pull you back into the present room. And then from there, you keep imagining what it'll be like to have that job and the new people you'll meet and the things you'll be able to do with the money you'll make. And if you think from that place as if it already happened, you allow it to happen instead of trying to force it to happen. But more importantly, you can't even force it to happen if you don't believe that it can. So reducing stress in our lives is not about saying, don't think about the future. Because, of course, we need to look to the future and plan for the future. But we're in the future room, we focus on what isn't. And when we are in the present room, we focus on what can be. And there's all the difference. And the bottom line is, we all have the ability to focus on whatever thoughts we want. And if you're thinking thoughts that don't make you feel good, it's your indication that you're in the wrong room.
So, okay. I love how one of the questions from your media bio talks about how addiction can kind of relate to the three rooms. And I'd love to see how you can tie into that a little bit, because that's a huge problem today.
Well, actually, one of the things that we really become addicted to is our thoughts and emotions. And that's how we can become, addicted to each room. And, being stuck in one of the rooms, the past room or the future room, and we're talking about stress, and we can talk about being stuck in the future room for a minute. I mean, one, there's more of a spiritual way of looking at it, is simply saying, if you're looking at the future and you're feeling all kinds of stress, those negative emotions are letting you know that you're not looking at the future the same way your own soul is looking at the future. And so when you connect to this, higher consciousness, you're going to be looking at, more creating your future. And we can talk about that, in a minute. That's one way to look at it. But being stuck from a scientific standpoint, being stuck, in one room, being stuck in the future, science now is explaining that every thought we have releases a chemical. And if you have a stressful thought, you're thinking about something in the future that you don't have, and you don't know how you're going to get it, and it's feeling cause of stress, those thoughts release, cortisol and adrenaline into the body, and it goes into your hormonal system, and then it sends a message back to the brain to produce more thoughts that are equal to that emotion, equal to that stress. So then it sends a message to the brain, more stressful thoughts, and you start thinking more stressful thoughts. You start thinking about, and you start worrying about that. And those chemicals then go back into your hormonal system, and it causes this loop. And it goes around and around. And that's how people can cause stress, and feel stress for not just a day or two, but for weeks or months, even years at a time. They're just constantly living in a state of stress. And we know our human body's not designed to be in that kind of stress for so long. So, once again, it starts with being aware that you're constantly in a state of stress. That to say, you know what, I need to start to come out of this. And I understand it's not as simple as, I've been in this state of stress for a year and I'm just in the future realm. I need to just pop back into the present realm. But you need to be aware of it so you can start to do things that can move you back into the present realm. And there are little things. Because I hear a lot of people say, well, I'm usually pretty good during the day, but you know, I just don't sleep really well. You know, I get up in the middle of the night, I start thinking about things I need to do the next day, and how am I going to get it done, and I just have trouble sleeping. It's really tough. But if you go to bed, and you're starting to think about things the next day, and worrying about how you're going to get things done, you are taking that stress with you to bed, and what's the first thing you're going to be thinking about in the morning? The same thing and the same stressful thoughts. And that's why you've never gotten out of that cycle. But something as simple as just two words. And if you, before you go to bed, and it's after you think about, let's say you're brushing your teeth, you're thinking about your day tomorrow and what you need to do. But when you get into bed, you just think of two words over and over. You just say, thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, you don't even have to consciously think about something that you're grateful for. You just keep saying thank you. You just get in the habit of just, I mean, it's the last two words I'm going to say and think about before I go to bed is just thank you, thank you, thank you. But subconsciously, you start to think of things that you're appreciative of, even if it's just the pillow, but it's just, you know, or the fact that your feet are up, but just thank you, thank you, thank you. And that helps you get to sleep a lot quicker. And the more often you do that, the first two words that pop into your mind in the morning, and I can attest this because it's the first two words I think of when I go to bed, and it's the first two words I think of every single morning when I wake up, is you don't even consciously realize. You just wake up starting with thank you, thank you, thank you. I get up in the morning and start going to the bathroom, thank you, thank you. Oh, thank you. And that thank you starts to subconsciously, you know, produce thoughts of appreciation and gratitude. And what chemicals are those releasing? You know, the serotonins and the oxytocins and those positive chemicals in your body. And you can become addicted to those emotions just as you can become addicted to cortisol and adrenaline and feelings of stress. And so it really depends on what you want to become addicted to. Because the more stress you're feeling and the more those chemicals you're releasing into the body, what happens? After a while, you start to either doctors start to prescribe medication for you to start to combat those negative feelings of stress, or you start to go and people start to go out and with the opioid and the heroin epidemic, those opiates temporarily relieve those feelings of stress. The problem is then once they wear off, the feelings of stress come back, and then you need more and more of those opiates to keep reducing those feelings. But we have natural chemicals that we can release in our body that make you feel good. And a simple thank you, because one of the greatest emotions that we can have is gratitude or appreciation. And like I said, if you're saying those two words, you just get in that habit. You don't even consciously think about feeling appreciation, but now all of a sudden you start to feel good. And we've all seen those people, like they always seem so happy. And we kind of get mad at them, like, oh, look at her. She's so damn happy. Look at what is, oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm glad things are going good for you. Or they always start winning things and they're so lucky. And we say that. But because they, when you talk to them, they constantly express gratitude and appreciation for everything. They're so grateful for everything. And does that cut off the spigot for their quote luck? Absolutely not. It keeps turning it on. So addiction is all about, if you understand that we can be addicted to our thoughts and emotions, then you need to ask yourself, which emotions do I want to get addicted to? And I'd say everybody would rather be addicted to feeling good. And people have to understand you can get addicted to that.
And you're saying the natural way, not just
right.
By using medications
exactly.
Or drugs.
Because the other way is, you know, a chemical way, with drugs is just a temporary.
Absolutely.
And it's always going to wear off, and the negative emotions are always going to come back.
I want to speak a little bit to what you were talking about before, just to use a little slightly different language from our own field of psychology. That one of the definitions that I learned about anxiety, which I really liked, was anxiety is the gap between the present and the past, or the gap between the present and the future, two areas over which we have no control. And I think in line with what you're saying is that we're trying to control things we cannot control, which are things from the past or in the future, that revs us up, and our bodies perceive that we're in danger, as if the woolly mammoth or the grizzly bear is right in front of us, when it's really just in our minds. And I think, you know, in speaking to what you're talking about, that's so valuable, back to Kelly's word before, that when we accept what we cannot, what we cannot control, and we actually take actions toward the things we can, it really helps put us in the right direction, in addition to just examining our thoughts.
Right.
That's so true. And that, you know, that gap is what does cause, you know, a tremendous amount of stress. And, you know, I think of it as two words. If we want to go back to, you know, the use of words, it's actually replacing one word in our thoughts can make all the difference. And typically, when we're thinking about something in the future, and we may be pulling it from our thoughts from the past, and we're projecting it into the future, when we are thinking about ourselves and what we want to do, and we're defining ourselves, by we define ourselves with the great I am. I am what? And we use the word not. Because people say, well, you're never going to be able to do that, or you're not good enough, or you're not fast enough, and you're not this. And you say, I know I'm not going to be able to do this, and I'm never going to be able to do that. And so we keep saying, I am not. And those I am not creates all this feelings of anxiety and stress, because I'm not going to be able to do this, because they're right. Who am I trying to kid? I'm not good enough for that. And you get into that, those thoughts and that mindset, and it keeps producing those feelings of anxiety.
Right.
And if we can learn to get rid of that one word, not, and replace it with one other word, already. So instead of I am not, you constantly think about and say to yourself, I already am.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes everything.
That's
because
awesome.
Already, I already am. We just say it, and it does something to your stomach. It makes you say, wow, I've already done this.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know that feeling of, oh, yeah, I've already done that. And it's something that's already accomplished, and it makes you feel good, and you're certain about it. And if you can say something that I already am, or, you know, I already am a good person, I already am a good student, I already am this, then you're coming from the point of already being that and feeling what it's like to have already accomplished it. And now you've completely wiped out that anxiety. You've replaced it with a feeling of accomplishment and appreciation, because you've already accomplished something. And now you can attract into your life all the things necessary to achieve what you desire.
Well said. Yes. And on that note, we have to happily close off our show. We're right at the end here. Thank you so much, Kevin Murphy. Where can people get the book, The Three Rooms?
It's available on Amazon.com. Just Kevin Murphy and The Three Rooms.
Okay.
Or I have a website, which is www.thethreerooms.com. And the three spelled out T-H-R-E-E.
Beautiful.
Thank you so much. Super fascinating and insightful. Really appreciate
so
that.
So much great
on.
Info.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
Okay. Bye-bye. Well.
Okay, so next week we have this is super fascinating, I find. So it's Jonathan Roach, and it's The Happiness Cure, Why Life Gets Better at 50.
And do you know what? It's The Happiness Curve.
What did I say?
Cure.
That's
when I read
funny.
It, I did the same thing.
You
but
did?
It's yes, but it's The Happiness Curve.
Oh my God, that
he's
is
he's gonna throw us a curveball.
He will. That is so funny. Wow,
I know. I was doing that, and then I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah,
I think it's The Happiness Curve.
But you
curve.
Did the same thing.
I
that
did.
Is so weird.
Yeah, I did.
I think
it's
just like automatic.
But it
but
is
anyway.
The Happiness Curve.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. All right. So thank you so much for joining in today. Any big plans for the weekend for you?
What's today? Tuesday?
It's only Tuesday.
Yeah. Someone wants rest.
I'm already thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, next week is the big week for Mr. Prowler gets his ultrasound. Oh. So that's when we make the decision about which direction
really?
To go.
Okay.
Yeah, so I will be doing the show remotely
next week.
The same tune we did 5 weeks ago.
What day is the big day?
Tuesday. Yeah. So, and we're going to be speaking with the vet right after the show.
Right.
So everybody send prayers for Prowler.
Absolutely, we will.
He's such a cutie pie. He's still hanging in, man. Now he gets up at 2:15 in the morning, between 1:15 and 3 o'clock, wants a feeding. Then he wants another feeding at like 5:15 or 6 o'clock. And now his brother has also completely stopped eating dry food. So he's like on the same thing. But you know what the little puppy cat likes? Baby food.
Oh my God, this is so adorable.
Yes, so we've had a little Gerber baby food.
This is so cute.
So cute. Oh my God.
All right. Well, thanks everybody.
How's your pooch?
Oh, he's doing all right. He's
doing
hanging in there.
Did he stop like scraping around for everything?
It's better.
A little
it's
better.
Still a little there, but it's better. I'll deal with it.
All right. Well, please follow us on social media. Instagram at Two Shrinks, Facebook, the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, and you can always go to our personal website, docandtherapist.com. Thank you so much for listening.
You.
Have a great week.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.